Welcome to this session on acceptance. My name is Francis. I'm a recovering sexaholic. My sobriety date is June 1st, 2001. I'll be your leader for this session. In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry the message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during this session. If you do not wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to share step up to the mic so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion and have the chairs here when we open up the mic, come and sit up and be ready to share so there won't be a lot of silent spaces in between speakers. Will you please join me in opening the session with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I will not mind. The essay purpose. Sexaholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and help others to achieve sexual sobriety. Just begin. I got to tell you something very interesting here that has nothing to do with the topic. Well, I guess it does in a way. But it was 19 years ago that I walked into a hotel in Nashville and attended my first SA conference. And about 3:30 in the afternoon, I just arrived, checked in, went into the big ballroom for the opening session, and this fellow gets up and starts. He says, "We may as well get this thing underway," and he does his little presentation, "Welcome to Nashville." And he's sitting in this room today, and I'm really nervous. But as acceptance goes, I'll accept his presence as one of the great gifts that it has been to me for those 19 years that I've been in the program. I want to start with a reading today, one I'm sure that part of it, at least, you'll all be familiar with. And it's from the AA Big Book, Doctor, Alcoholic Addict. It helped me a great deal to become convinced that alcoholism was a disease, not a moral issue. That I had been drinking as a result of a compulsion, even though I had not been aware of the compulsion at the time. And that sobriety was not a matter of willpower. The people of AA had something that looked much better than what I had. But I was afraid to let go of what I had in order to try something new. There was a certain sense of security in the familiar. At last, acceptance proved to be the key to my drinking problem. After I had been around AA for 7 months, tapering off alcohol and pills, not finding the program working very well, I was finally able to say, "Okay, God, it is true that I, of all people, strange as it may seem, and even though I didn't give my permission, really, really am an alcoholic of sorts. And it's all right with me. Now, what am I going to do about it?" When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. From that moment on, I have not had a single compulsion to drink. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing or situation, some fact of my life unacceptable to me, and I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. In 1986, I read an article in a magazine. It's called, it was on sexual addiction. And I think it was Sexual Addiction and Morality. I read it and I immediately identified with it. I knew what I was. At least there was a name given to something that I had been living for quite a number of years already. I couldn't deny it, but I didn't want to do anything with it because, of course, it talked about the 12-step program and recovery. And I knew that that meant you had to talk to people about it. And I'm sure, like many, we felt I could never talk to anybody about this stuff. So I put the article away, but I couldn't get it out of my mind. Every once in a while, I'd come back again and say, that's what you are. And I tried more willpower and more other things to overcome this, and I just couldn't. And then God gave me one of the greatest gifts that I've had, was to encounter somebody who had completed a recovery program, and I was asked to take his fifth step. It was a wonderful experience. First of all, it taught me I could sit and listen to him tell his story and not feel any judgment about him. I just couldn't believe, you know, what he was telling me. It wasn't true, because he just looked so alive and so ready to live life again. But it also really touched me, because I found a God of love that day. And I knew if I could have something like that, I could work this program. But I still didn't have any place to go. And then in November of 88, the fellow was struggling a lot in his program, so I went to visit him. And that was the first time I started to talk to somebody. After he talked about where he was, I started to talk about where I was in my life. And he accepted me. And that was something new, that I could actually hint at an addiction and somebody wouldn't leave the room. It was the most impressive thing to me was the feeling of acceptance from members who were practicing the third tradition by tolerating and accepting me. I felt acceptance is love, and love is God's will for us. It was April of the next year that I finally went back to him and had another talk. I said, because of what I'd seen happen in his life with accepting his addiction and the program, I was now ready to do something. And so I went to talk to a spiritual friend who, before I could tell my story, he told me his story. And I had no idea he was in the same fix as I was in. But he accepted me again. I could tell him details I thought I would never tell anybody. And he just sat and listened. And when it was done, he said, you know, that's only about 15% of the problem. At the time, I thought it was the whole problem. But he said, no, it's only about 15%. But, you know, work on that. Start with that part. And he gave me a phone number. And I acted upon it immediately. I made an appointment to meet a fellow the next day from the Regina group. And we just sat in a cafe in Regina, and I shared with my story with him, and something I didn't think I would ever tell anybody, certainly not sitting in a public place. And he just sat and listened. You know. It was just always amazing that these people just listened to what I had to say. I kind of fell apart after that talk, and I ended up going out to a retreat house. Just spent some time in a quiet place and cried my eyes out. But then I had to find was there somebody else I could talk to. And so one of the priests there, I got a hold of him and talked to him. And he gave me two books. One is the 12 and 12 I have with me here today. The other one was a book by another author about sexual addiction. And so I was finding that this dreaded thing that I had wasn't so bad once I accepted it. It was who I was. I didn't have to live that way anymore, because others were showing me there was another way to live. The disease was a disease. I got a sponsor, and he was ready to work with me, and he's very enthusiastic. He'd been through treatment himself. He had tapes. He had books that he recommended to read. And the theme for this conference is, you know, enjoying life. And he certainly was one to encourage me to enjoy things. Don't take yourself too seriously. Like, it's okay, you know. I went to my first meeting with him. And I was always so amazed that when I was going to the meeting, walking down the street thinking, everybody knows where I'm going. I wasn't sure how they're supposed to know that, but they knew it. And I walked into the building. I did have to ask what room SA meeting was in. And the people, oh, yeah, upstairs, that room, very casual. And I go in, set up the meeting, did my first step. And after the meeting, we went out for coffee, again, to a restaurant. I thought, this is amazing. We were in that room sharing these stories, and now we're just out having a good time. Like, this is okay. So to be accepted in that way was good. One of the big things that I had to learn to accept, big change in thinking for me, was to accept the disease concept of sexaholism. It's one I have to keep reminding myself and listen carefully. I heard that very early on in the program. One fellow often said, I'm not a bad person trying to become good. I'm a sick person trying to become well. With my background, very strong religious upbringing, there's a lot of moral issues that always came in with this thing, what I is doing. And like we had in that AA reading, I had to say, it's not a moral issue. It's a disease. And I'm trying to overcome a disease. I'm trying to get better, healthier, not bad becoming good. So I've been grateful for those talks I've heard on that. And that continues to come out again. It's a disease. It's a disease. I'm working on a disease. Okay, and I have to keep working on it. And finally, what I want to talk about acceptance is from the 12th step aspect of our program. We talk about the spiritual awakening. I certainly had that. I'm grateful for how I've come to know my God, and this God who has, some days I've almost felt the physical embrace, because I've really come to know my God who loves me. And he accepts me as his child. He's the one who made me. And if he can love me, can I love myself? So that part. But that second part of the 12th step, to practice these principles in all our affairs. Now, what have I learned about accepting you people in this room? You're accepting me. At least you haven't. Nobody's left yet. But it's not, I can't just sort of live program in one part and then go live my life in the world. That's never going to work. But practice these principles, this acceptance in all the things. And we have another little reading here from Daily Reflections. When I'm having a difficult time accepting people, places, or events, I turn to this passage, and it relieves me of many of an underlying fear regarding others or situations of life presents me. The thought allows me to be human and not perfect, to regain my peace of mind. So the acceptance of people that I've learned to accept in the program, other people with the disease I have, I take that into life, and say, I'm human, and you're human, and we're not going to run this perfect world, because even our program says, growth, not perfection. We're never seeking that perfection. And so I can also take that into the world. I don't have to be perfect, and I'm certainly reaching that goal, but others don't have to be either. And I can accept them where they're at, who they are. And I think another thing the program has taught me is the stories that we have to listen to, that we listen to. When we just see somebody doing a job, say, they did a good job, but they could have done better, or I could have done it better. That's just looking at them as somebody doing a job. But when I have a chance to listen to where they're from, what their day has been like, whatever, I might say, man, and you managed to still even do that with all that else is going on in your life, to accept people and their whole life and their whole story is something I've also learned in this. And I have to keep doing that, because I can sometimes get very work-oriented and goal-oriented and achieving and start to value everybody according to those criteria. That's not what it's about. My sense of inadequacy is sometimes very high. It's well, and I've got to keep working on that one. That it's a false thing. Other people's gifts, to see in them the gifts that I've received in the program, to accept the gifts of people's presence. People were there in that room when I needed a meeting to go to. And there's always been somebody around. Okay? I don't worry about what gifts I might have for others, because I might think this is my gift and they might not see it at all, but they might have found something else. But there are gifts. Codependency issues are a big thing too for me. I really worry the last couple years in my work. Codependency issues are big. I'm very fearful of my boss. He doesn't know it, but maybe if I went and told him, it would. You know, I'm really afraid of you. He'd probably laugh. Maybe I should try it. And then an issue that's always been in my life has been issues of right or wrong. I've lived a very black-white life. You know, very few gray issues. It's this or it's this. It's correct or it's wrong. And so, and to accept that things can be other ways. You know, there are other possibilities. One final reading I'd like to take is, again, from Daily Reflections. Freedom came to me only with my acceptance that I could turn my will and my life over to the care of my higher power, whom I call God. Serenity seeped into the chaos of my life when I accepted that what I was going through was life, and that God would help me through my difficulties, and much more as well. Since then, He has helped me through all my difficulties. When I accept situations as they are, not as I wish them to be, then I can begin to grow and have serenity and peace of mind. Okay. So I think I've talked long enough. I'm glad I accepted the offer to speak at this convention. And now you can accept the challenge if you wish, or the gift to share with others. It is a taped meeting, so you'll have to come and speak to the mic. There's a chair here, and so we can keep the flow going. The next speakers can come and use the chair there. So we've got about 45 minutes or so for sharing.
Hi, my name's Anthony. I'm a recovering sexaholic from the Sligo group in Ireland, and really pleased to be here. I'm sexually sober since Monday the 7th of July last year, and forms of acting out were compulsive masturbation, visiting prostitutes, ringing phone sex lines, masturbating to images, written, printed, visual on the internet, on mobile phones, getting into affairs, and flirting in many different forms, and also many forms of acting out that I'm probably subtle forms that I may not yet have come to my awareness. And acceptance for me, that was a really particularly good reading. The hardest thing for me to accept at the start was that I was a sexaholic. I did not want to accept the fact that I was, because my pride didn't want me to accept it, because it was too painful. Coming from a very devout Catholic background, and whatever else in my childhood that led me to believe that I had to be as better than, stronger than, more intelligent than, and so on, and probably perfect in order to be accepted by a higher power, or a God of my forefathers' understanding. So for me, today, acceptance is the fact that I need to get up every day and pray to the higher power of my understanding. I need to accept the fact that I have to make phone calls and want to make phone calls every single day, two or three times a day, and to accept the fact that my best thinking got me to where I am today, and that somebody else's better thinking can get me to somewhere different. I just heard it there recently, or I'm also a compulsive gambler. You know, I've been in recovery, thank God, a day at a time for a long time from compulsive gambling, but it didn't keep me sober in this particular addiction until such time as I accepted that I needed to grow spiritually, because I had died spiritually. And in my other recovery, I had progressed materially, but I hadn't progressed spiritually. and a long-term sober member in GA would often talk about the divide between this side is where I'm acting out, and this side is the other is where there's freedom and hope. And that if I could imagine that it was one side of the Niagara Falls, and there was a big drop underneath, and that there was a wire across, and that there's a wheelbarrow, and that I believe that God could take me to the other side. And I believe that there was a higher power, but he said that with faith was getting into the actual wheelbarrow. And the question I have to ask myself every morning is, have I got the acceptance that God can do for me what I can't do for myself, and allow my self-centeredness and pride and ego to be challenged and broken? And I'm on that journey at the moment. So I'll just finish on this, just to say that it's so important for me every day to accept that I'm a sexaholic. And I was told, and I heard at these meetings, and everything I'm saying is I've heard at meetings, was that this is a forgetting disease, and that if I wasn't coming to these meetings on a regular basis, that I would forget the fact that I was a sexaholic and start to try and run the show again myself, and I would lose that acceptance that I have today. So I'm very, very grateful to be here. And if Mike from Wales happens to be here, if he'd come up and sometime and introduce himself to me, that would be great. Thanks.
I'm David. I'm a recovering sexaholic. And I have to admit that I was the guy that was here 19 years ago. And you know, I really wasn't going to say anything here until Anthony got up and spoke, because one of the privileges you have if you've been around for 19 years, and I've been around a little bit more than that actually, is that last Saturday I was talking to a person that I sponsor in Ireland, and he said, you know, if you see this guy named Anthony there, tell him I said hello. So Robert says hello. What a gift. What a gift this program is. I had the privilege of chairing the first conference we had here in Nashville in 1990, and I had been here for a couple of years. I was about 5 years sober, and I was single, and I had no hope of ever having a relationship or a family. And today I have two kids, and I've been married for 12 and a half years, and I've been sober all that time, and it's a gift of God. And I get to know people like Francis. And how many people are here for their very first time to a national conference? For the people who will be listening to this tape, there were probably at least 20 people that held up their hand. And, you know, my prayer for you is that 19 years from now, at a conference wherever you may be, that you can look around and as I can today, and see friends that you've known for that long. Today, my challenge is to accept the fact that God hasn't lifted all of my character defects from me, and I still suffer from a judgmental spirit, a critical spirit. I like to gossip. I still am challenged with fear. But, you know, if you get a chance, buy our publication, Step Into Action, and read Step 7, because it says, you know, God will remove each day just exactly what we need to have removed. And my challenge today, I want it removed yesterday. I don't want to be that judgmental, critical person, and today I'm going to accept that that's where I need to be. So thank you, Francis, and thank you for all being here. I'm going to keep coming back. Thanks.
Thanks, David.
Hi, my name's Louise. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi.
I got a lot out of the talk. Thanks very much. Definitely acceptance. Is really, really hard. I was brought up to be, you know, really good. I was, you know, smart in school, and I was expected to go far. I went to a really good university. I was sort of brought up posh, you know. So for me to kind of then have to face up to the fact that I'm a sexaholic, especially as a woman, was just earth-shattering. You know, but I probably deserved it in a way because I was very arrogant and very maybe overconfident. You know, I would have been very, very confident in myself in the way I came across to people. It was a huge blow for my ego, really, you know, to come down from such a height. And, you know, I would have, you know, to call myself an addict is something that, you know, it still is very, very hard for me. And acceptance for me is progressive. You know, every time I would get into sort of obsessive relationships with men, and every time, you know, I'd think this is the one, you know, this is the guy, the man of my dreams, and then, you know, it would take a long time to realize that I had been living in a dream, you know, and every time I came out of that dream and I could see the illusion behind me, I'd always ask myself the question, how did I get there? How did I get here? How did I get to where I am today in my life, you know? And I really could never figure out that until I came to SA and I realized that, you know, the addiction is stronger than us, you know, and it takes us to places that we didn't plan to go. And it took my life, you know, into places that I never planned to go. When I look into the future and I said, okay, this is what I want my life to be, you know, it certainly wasn't the way it turned out. So I'm really grateful to have a solution to the problem. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Nicholas and I'm a sexaholic. Well, I'm not sober. I've been in the AA program for 2 years, and I've not been drinking for 2 years, so that's really wonderful. And I've been in the SA program for 6 months. So my first convention, that was just a few months ago, I was in Akron, Ohio. And I came there, I really believed there would be no way to save me. Like, I really believe, like, there would be no way I could not act out. I mean, I had to act out, and I came there, and I was like, okay, you're going to go there. I didn't believe in it, and I knew I would die of it. It would be either death because I would get a disease, or either jail or suicide, you know. So that's that was tough, and I got sober, and I came back to my country being sober, and that was incredible. And I was like, I didn't realize it, and sobriety came like, whoa. And I had all I have is like glimpse of sanity, you know, like 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but no more than that. And acceptance for me is like, I guess other people accepted me, and that's how it started, really, because I couldn't accept myself. I mean, I was really convinced to be a bad guy with bad thoughts, and so people first accepted me, and then things got better, actually. And then God, it's so bad to be here for my lust, you know. It's killing my lust. It's terrible. And it's really killing my lust, and because I like my lust. I don't like all of my lust, but I like my lust. I mean, and there are part of my lust that I like, but the problem is that, you know, I got the first thing I got when I came in the hotel was like, oh my God, this is a great hotel. What a nice room. There is a big swimming pool. And why the hell are you here alone? You should be here with a girl or a boy and enjoy yourself. And then I just like, okay, I came here for the SA convention, so that makes sense. And so am I done with lust? No, I'm not done with lust, and I can feel that. I'm not done with lust, but I accept. I really start to accept the fact that I'm a sexaholic, and this is really helping. This is really helping, and I guess the next step is surrender now. But I accept the fact that I'm a sexaholic, and that's really the great stuff for me now. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Nicholas.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Eric, and I'm a recovering sexaholic.
Hey, Eric.
From Pensacola, Florida. I've been sober since Memorial Day 2003, and I've been coming to conferences since January of 2000. I'll keep coming back until I've spent as much as I did on my addiction. Got to think about that one for a bit. Our white book says that the program doesn't tell us how to stop. We've done that 1,001 times. It tells us how to not start again. And for me, what's happened in my life is that in recovery, I've had to come to realize that my problem always was how to deal with life on life's terms, because it was not dealing with life that sent me off to do the crazy, insane things I did. And I've got a couple of really short stories that talk about how acceptance fits into that learning to live with life. Several years ago, this conference was in Daytona Beach. And I drove from Pensacola, where I live, down to Daytona Beach, which is about a 7 hours drive. And I arrived there with my registration. I thought it was all in place. And I got to the counter, and the registration wasn't in place. And one of my very good friends, Yossi, was there at the counter. And as it became clear that things weren't working right, I became hot under the collar and angry about the situation. And then he told me I wasn't going to be able to have any meals during the conference, and I became even more angry. And I ended up shouting at my friend Yossi across the counter because things weren't the way I wanted them to be. Okay. This afternoon, I arrived here. You see where this is going. Well, this is even better, actually. I drove here from Pensacola. It's about a 8-hour drive, about a 7-hour drive from Pensacola up here, too. But I drove yesterday. And I arrived here at the hotel at about 12:30. And the first thing I had to do was to send some email that I had done this morning but not been able to send out. And I sat in the lobby, and I was unable to get the email to go out through the hotel facility. And I was frustrated with a computer trying to make it work. And I said, well, okay, let's just set that aside for a little bit, and let's go pick up my registration packet. And I go down to the registration desk, and the registration that I had done through the web back in August was not in their records. But there's a huge difference here, because this afternoon I've been in a position of humility and acceptance. And in both cases, both the email and the problem with the registration, I just shrugged and I said, well, okay, that's the way it is. Let's go ahead and deal with it in an appropriate way. And I talked with the people behind the counter, and they were very helpful about it, and they managed to make it all work and give me the proper registration and take another payment for it, because they didn't see any record of the payment, and neither did I either. And then I went back to the lobby, and I found a different way to connect in from the lobby, and I sent the email from the lobby. And the whole thing took maybe an extra hour over what I had expected, but I was at peace, and I was calm. And in Daytona Beach, after shouting at my friend, I felt like going up to the room and acting out. Here, I don't feel like acting out. I feel like being friends and enjoying life and enjoying all of my good friends here at the conference. So thanks for listening.
Thanks, Eric.
I'm Alan, recovering sexaholic from New York. You didn't let me say from New York. Come on. I practiced that 10 times before I got up here. Oh, the ego never stops. Mine doesn't. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you, Francis, for the talk and great shares. And when I came into program a little over 7 years ago, I just lost a six-figure job. I was suicidal in thought. Anybody else other than myself would look at myself and say that my life was somewhat chaotic. Then when I got a sponsor and started to work the steps, and he says, well, the first step is, you know, we admitted we're powerless over lust. And I had to think about that. I hear that. I don't really understand that or accept that, but okay. And my life has become unmanageable, and that I just said, oh, my life is manageable. You know, everything's fine, everything's cool. I don't think I knew what life was to say if it was manageable or not. And it took me a long time to accept that fact. My experiences that It took me a good 6 months to be able to say at a meeting that I'm a sexaholic and not, like, shiver inside over the words. It was like when I would say I'm a sexaholic, I think the first few weeks I didn't even say it. I'm like, I'm Alan. Well, actually, that's not true. When I first came in, I said I was Steve. I couldn't even. I was petrified to say what my real name was. And I'm sorry if there's a Steve here, but I don't know why I picked that name. Then a few weeks into, I said, everybody, my real name is Alan. I was really petrified to mention my name. And after 6 months, I started to say that I'm a sexaholic. And it took me a few years in program to really accept that fact. And it's really only been recent, the last year or so, that I really accepted the fact that I'm a sexaholic. And what I found is that I don't have to accept everything today, because that was too much for me. I couldn't accept everything. I start off accepting the fact, not that I really understood it, I just knew that I needed to go to meetings and I needed to do the program. I didn't really know what it meant. I didn't know what the consequences would be. I didn't know what the outcome would be, the results. It didn't matter. I knew that when I got here, it wasn't good. And people that were in the rooms had something that was good. So what the heck? And that was really all I had. That was the level of my acceptance for a good few years in the program. And recently I've been able to accept the fact that I am a sexaholic. And that means a lot of things to me. That means that my mind tells me lies on a constant basis. It tells me that I'm the best and it tells me that I'm the worst. It tells me that you're the best and tells me that you're the worst. And it tells me lies on a constant basis, and I'm starting to accept the fact that these are just lies. The biggest awareness that I've had recently is the fantasies that I fantasize about, and not always sexual, even just fantasies are just that, fantasy. And for a five-year-old, that's probably trivial. But for me, that was a huge awareness. And I don't have to go through the whole course of events. And these women that I would fantasize about or situations that I would fantasize about, like future resentments, future conversations that haven't taken place. And the person that I was all fearful to talk to tomorrow because I just had this whole resentful conversation with them, they don't know that I had this in my mind. And I was like, wow, this is great. I mean, I don't have to take this any further. It's just my disease talking. And that was huge. And another thing that I've started to accept is my past. You know, somebody told me this a couple weeks ago that he stopped trying to make his past better. And I was like, wow, that's great, wow. Because I've always tried to make my past better. And I don't have to make my past better. Today I'm assuming that I'm making my future better. My mother used to say, if you put cocoa and cake in the recipe, it's going to come out chocolate. And if you don't, it won't. And if I don't go to meetings, I'm not going to be sober. But if I do, maybe I will be. And I still struggle with accepting myself as I am today. That is my present struggle. But there are things that I do accept today. And I just want to end off with one thing. There's a lot of new people here, and it's great because you guys are helping me stay sober, helping me remember what it's like to be new, because I forget. You know, I forget in a week or two what it's like to act out and the horrible parts of it. I only remember the fun of it. And there is some fun to it. I'm not going to lie that there is no fun to it. But whenever I try, I'm never able to grab that fun anymore. I don't know. It's just the way it is. But I just came back from a cruise with my wife. And 5 years ago, if a wizard would come to me and say, in 5 years from now, you're going to go on a cruise with your wife, I would have asked him to take a urine test to see if he's on some type of drugs or something, because that was the furthest thing from my thoughts. I had been thrown out of the house. I was in the midst of an 8-month relapse, and I couldn't have even imagined that such a thing would be possible. And when my wife and I got into the cabin, we just hugged each other and just cried and just thanked God. So my only thought is, and my experience is, that if you don't have that freedom, him yet, and you don't have that acceptance yet, don't leave before the miracle happens. It will happen. If it's happened to me and others, it will happen. And the only way it will continue to happen for me is if I keep coming back also. I didn't get no degree or certificate or reward or any of that. I got to keep coming back like I did the first day. Anyways, thanks.
My name is Alan. Just kidding. My name is Steve. Grateful recovering sexaholic. Thanks, Alan, for the real easy icebreaker there. My forms of acting out have included masturbation, pornography, sex with animals, sex with men, sex with women, paid for sex, and extramarital affairs. As you might imagine with that list, when I first came into the rooms, it was not real hard for me to accept I was a sexaholic and that I was insane. Because I really wanted to stop. You know, I came up in church and I had reasons of my own for a long time, you know, wanting to stop my acting out, especially after I got married and couldn't stop. Still can't stop acting out. But what changed it and what got me into some positive recovery was, Harvey A, you know, pulled us all out one day. Those of us who were having trouble, he pulled us all out and had a little breakout meeting on disease concept. And so I really appreciate what was read earlier about, you know, accepting the concept of disease. Because for me, I was just a bad person. You know, I was just bad. I had a choice, and I made the wrong choice. That's what I thought deep down. You know, and Harvey said, would you guys, you know, everybody that believes that you have a disease, raise your hand. And I couldn't raise my hand. I thought about it for a second. I said, yeah, I don't really believe that. I just think I don't have enough control over myself. And then, thank God, you know, he began to go through the physics of the hypothalamus and how it responds to a certain stimulus and what our big brain does with that and why physiologically we act out. And, you know, whether you buy into that or that exact explanation or not is irrelevant. But for me, that talk brought home, I have a disease. And if I had diabetes and forgot, as my father does, and forgot to give myself a shot, as he has done, or gave myself two shots, I didn't follow the exact instructions of recovery for my disease, then he goes into diabetic shock. Do we get mad at him? Do we think he's got a moral problem? You know, absolutely not. You know, he's got a disease, and so do I. And there's treatment. Thank God, you know, there's treatment, the steps. You know, when I came into the first meeting and looked at the steps, you know, for the first time, I'd never been exposed to 12 steps, you know, and I, wow. Yeah, I'm insane, and, you know, God can restore me. You know, I just immediately, I was like, okay, I'm a sexaholic. I accepted that. But it took me a while to accept that I had a disease and, you know, that I'm powerless. And I remember, you know, relaying some of my early acting out experiences, which started right when I hit puberty. And another guy in the program that was my sponsor at the time, you know, he said, you know, oh, that's clear. That's just evidence that you have a disease and you didn't have control over your actions. I had control. I chose. But I didn't. And that's what set me free, because shame, and I'll end with this, you know, shame is the thing at the top of the addictive cycle for me. You know, I stop acting out, start to breathe, start to think I'm okay, and come back around. I start to think about some of my acting out, and that shame just grabs hold of me, and I got to act out again to medicate that shame. And, you know, when I was able to accept that I have a disease, it's not a moral issue. I'm a sick person getting well, not a bad person getting good. I'm okay. Then I could start to get some positive sobriety. And, you know, I couldn't have done that without you guys, without, you know, sharing. You know, my sponsors had me, share my forms of acting out whenever I share for quite some time now. And, you know, doing that and having guys come up to me and give me a hug or pat on the back and ask me to go have pizza or give me a call on the phone. Yeah, wow, I can accept now that I'm lovable. you know, that you guys can love me, my higher power can love me, and I don't have to walk around in shame over my disease today. So couldn't have done this by myself. You know, you guys taught me that. God has been a God with skin on through this program for me. I'm eternally grateful. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share. Thanks.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Jim, and I'm a very nervous sexaholic, but very glad to be here, and I can't think of a place I'd rather be right now than right here with you guys. Thank you, Francis, for chairing this meeting and for lending me your book. When I, you know, acceptance, when I saw it on the schedule, I'm like, man, I need to be there. And the reason why I acted out a lot of times was because people weren't behaving the way I wanted them to. And, you know, if my ex-wife wasn't behaving just the way I wanted her to, then all I had to do was just log on to the computer, dial what's important, and suddenly it was okay. You know, what she was doing was okay. Until the porn and the other forms of acting out stopped working and they started to turn on me, then, you know, when I got sober, I actually got worse because I didn't have that solution anymore. And I needed something else, or I was going to go back to the old way. And fortunately, you guys offered something. And, you know, because my obsession du jour after getting sober was less and less about pornography or affair partners, and it was more and more about what Marina was doing or not doing. And, you know, like Steve, I had, you know, acted out with creatures with more than four legs, and so, you know, but I wasn't as sick as you guys, you know. I didn't need a spiritual solution. I'll just come to meetings and try it on my own willpower, and I didn't need God. If there was a God, you know, I was toast because I had done so many things that were sinful. But I kept coming to meetings, and for 18 months I wasn't willing to work the program until I ended up flat on my back in treatment, and then I became willing to accept the spiritual solution because I had no other choice. I had tried the self-help books. I had tried medication only, just going to meetings. And one paragraph that kind of jumped out at me in the big book is that the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may be sometimes quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. And that's me. And, you know, when I did my fourth step, it helped me accept my own defects, and it also helped me accept other people's defects because I got to see my own part. And it's much easier for me to come in here and tell you that I had sex with an animal than it is to say I was wrong. Oh, I was wrong. And, but, you know, the earth didn't open up and swallow me whole when I did my fourth step. And I did that fourth column. And, you know, as a teacher of mine says, it wasn't uncovering what I am, it's uncovering what I'm not. And I got to see what I'm not, and I got to see what was blocking me off from a higher power. And, it helped me to see, you know, that if you spot it, you got it. You know, a lot of the stuff I was resentful at of other people I was doing. And, you know, my ex-wife was on my list, and she was, I thought she was controlling and manipulative, and I had all that stuff. And I heard another teacher say, you know, if I unleash the dogs of judgment, they always turn around and bite me. And that's what was happening. And I want justice for them and mercy for me. I can't have that. And, you know, the seventh step helped me accept, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, I'm powerless over all my character defects, not just my lust. And there may be some use for some of my defects. And that was a new concept for me. And, you know, if I came into SA and you guys were all perfect, you'd be no use for me. And I believe it's the same thing for me. You know, if I can be of use with character defects and all. And another thing that I am trying to accept is forgiveness from others and doing my ninth step with people and having that forgiveness and accepting that forgiveness helps me accept myself too. So thanks for letting me share.
My name is Quint. I'm a sexaholic. When I came into this group, it was a little under a year ago. I was in a very bad downward spiral in my life. I had accepted I was an addict years ago. I've been on drugs, alcohol, you name it. I've been addicted to it. But I beat everything in my life except for sex. I could not stop lusting. And I couldn't figure out why. It got to the point where my wife was like, either you find help or we're done. And that was my biggest fear in life, was losing my wife. Because I've always had the fear of being alone, codependency, I guess. And when I came into the first time I sat down in a group, I'll never forget, there was three other guys there, and they were all at least 10 years older than me, if not 20. I felt way out of place. I felt like I should not be there. I mean, I walked in the room, and I felt like I should just turn around and leave. I mean, it just did not seem like it was a place for me. But before the end of that group, before the end of that hour, in 1 hour, I felt accepted for the first time. I didn't feel accepted in school. I didn't feel accepted by my parents. My parents were addicts in every way you can think. That's all they ever taught me, really, was how to be an addict. So I never knew what acceptance was for myself. I could accept things around me, but I never felt like I was accepted to anyone else. And then three guys made me feel more accepted in my life than I had ever felt. So I am very grateful for that. And even since then, the more people I meet in SA, the more I feel accepted. Because that's been my biggest problem, I think, is my self-esteem in my entire life, is that, you know, it's always told me the lies that I'm no good, that I'm not worth anything, that I'm a bad person. And like other people sat here and just said before me, I'm not a bad person. I'm a sick person, and I just want to be well, is what I'm looking for in this world. I want to be happy. I want to be joyous, and I want to be free from this. And I can't have that without this group. I know that. I've learned that in less than a year, that if I don't go to meetings, I will not be sober. If I don't call my peers in my group and say, hey, I'm having these problems, it'll go to places I don't want to be. So I've even seen, I had to accept that how sick I was even more after I was in SA than before, because after I started using the steps and trying not to act out, my disease would come up even harder, and I ended up acting out in more ways than I was before I was in the program. And at first I thought that it was just that it wasn't right for me, and that I, you know, and I had another acceptance in my life. I had to accept the fact that I was so sick. And the more that I worked on the steps to stop acting out, the stronger my disease tried to be and come up from behind me and, you know, and make me go do things that I did not want to be involved in. So I'm very grateful to be here. This is the first international I've ever been to, and it is just amazing. I mean, I've only been here since 12:30, and it's the things I've heard and the people I've seen here is just amazing. So thank you.
Thanks, Quinn. Sean, and I'm a sexaholic, and I just got a 2-minute warning. I'm a little bit nervous. And, you know, acceptance has always been hard because I've always been rebellious type. Anybody who said stand always had to say, you hate that, do this or that. And like, either I would say, to hell with you, or I'd act like I'd agree with you and then turn around and say, to hell with you. And do the exact opposite. It's kind of hard for me to really conform unless I can really trust the person. When you've been lied to, deceived, cheated, betrayed by your parents, no doubt. So it's kind of hard to accept things as they are. You're trying to think that things could be better. I know they can, but I always feel that somewhere along the line, I can always go back to what I was used to. That'd be the comfortable way to deal with things. I still have a hard time accepting that that won't be the case. It'll be more pain, more heartache than before. So I'm willing to accept that too. I had a hard time. Last year, around this time, I had to accept something that I didn't want to accept. The one person I thought could handle anything took her life. And not only destroyed her friends, but destroyed both of us. That was my sister, kid's sister. And I still have a hard time accepting that. And so it's been tough. But it's something I need to do and something I need to work on. Acceptance. That I am a sick individual. And I need to really obey people that I can trust. But I've been realizing right now that I don't. I don't obey them. And that's kind of hard to accept right now. But it's the truth.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
I want to thank everybody for their shares. Anything you have heard at this meeting is strictly the opinion of the individual participant. The principles of SA are found in our 12 steps and 12 traditions. Let's close this meeting with the seventh step prayer. My Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I think I should probably get this CD listed to myself a few times every day for a little while there. I just have to work on your stuff like that. Oh, another day to fail, but I can't watch it if your web position wants to. Then I get on my prayer. My first thought, I read this stuff. I don't believe that.
You know, everybody has something in common, regardless of where they are. Well, let's hook up for a meal here.
We will for sure, yeah. Has you haven't seen Kirk yet?
I have not. I called him right before I came. He said he'd be in about 6 or 6:30.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I didn't know what time he was arriving.
You're running a little bit later.
Sure. There'll be, you know, the big room where the registration desk. I think Lee has a table down at the far end.
Yes.
Oh, they'll all be available, but he will probably have them available as they go on if you just want to buy individual
dinner. By Sunday morning, yeah. I think you can get the whole
show. Sunday morning will be everything, but he usually has them to go along if you want to buy just one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just go down there. There's somebody at the desk down there at his place all the time.
My dad was born in Waverly.
Oh, my goodness, you're the second guy here from Waverly.
Really?
There's a guy here right from Gallipoli.
1913, Waverly, Saskatchewan.
Yeah. And he was born in Waverly.
Okay.
Yeah. I was in Waverly for 5 years. Church there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Are you a priest?
Yes. 97 to 2002.
My dad's French Canadian. There must have been some French Canadian people there.
Where I am right now is a lot French Canadian.
Are there?
I'm east of Weyburn.
Yeah,
it's very heavy French. And I don't have any French, so. But I think they've accepted me.
Good story.
Yeah, good to meet you. And where are you? North Carolina.
Yeah, Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah.
He moved to Kenora. Then he was a teacher, and it was during the Depression. He got a job in Cleveland. So we grew up in Cleveland.
Oh, I can't do that.
Right. So we just moved up there.
What was his name?
Joseph Henry Etienne-Arai.
Etienne-Arai. Oh, yeah.
His father was Jean-Baptiste.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. Oh, good to meet you.
Small world, isn't it?
It is indeed. Meet two people.
Good.
Francis, you were fabulous. Aw.
Sound right?